It's a movie I did not see, thus cannot recommend, but in the 1991 movie Grand Canyon, an attorney apparently attempts to avoid a traffic jam, and in so doing winds up in a very, very bad neighborhood. His car stalls, and as he's waiting for a tow truck to come, his car is surrounded by a bunch of young thugs who obviously wished to do him and his car wrong. Just as they are preparing, apparently, to mug him, the tow truck arrives, and the tow truck driver gets out and hooks up the man's car. At that point, the leader of those young thugs approaches the tow truck driver and complains to him about him interrupting their fun. The truck driver at that point takes the leader of the group aside and gives him what indeed becomes something of a life lesson. He says to the young man, "Man, the world ain't supposed to work like this. Maybe you don't know that this ain't the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be able to do my job without asking you if I can, and that dude is supposed to be able to wait with his car without you ripping him off. Everything's supposed to be different than what it is here." Truth be told, a lot of life is very, very distorted. It's not supposed to be this way. And it's not just natural disasters and disease that make that so. What most distorts and what most damages is sin itself. The world doesn't talk much about sin anymore. In fact, it seems somewhat embarrassing when people use the word. I remember a number of years ago when then President Ronald Reagan dared to use the word evil in public speech. He was ridiculed roundly. But we all certainly live in the midst of such sin. Whether it is on the school playground where children exclude another, or the office where false reports can ruin a career, or in the home where what ought to be the safest of relationships turn out to be the most treacherous, we all know what sin is about. We know what a world polluted by sin is. Last week from the book of James, we looked at the trials, that is, the difficulties that come in life, and how God uses those trials to, in fact, shape our own lives. Now, this week, we look briefly at what too often happens to us in the midst of those trials. That is, we are sorely tempted to sin against God and to sin against each other. To the issue of trials, James wrote this, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance." Now today, to the issue of temptation, he writes, verse 14, "When tempted, no one should say, 'God is tempting me,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he is dragged away and enticed." James says, in the midst of life's difficulties, don't blame God. And whatever you do, don't you dare blame God for the sins that you commit. Nate Larkin was raised in a Christian home. He graduated from seminary and began to pastor a local church. He was considered by his congregation to be very successful as that ministry flourished. 4 years into his marriage, Nate acknowledged to his wife that he had for some time had difficulty with the issue of pornography. But when he didn't mention it to her again, she assumed that he had somehow simply gotten over it. But Nate's use of pornography, which began in adolescence, simply intensified over time. His double life, for that's what it was, his double life, I think it was illustrated at its worst when on his way to lead his church in a candlelight Christmas Eve service, he paid for sex. It was when his wife found condoms in his possession that he finally admitted what had been going on for all of that time, and he was able to begin to change. Now, I can easily imagine the kind of thoughts that Nate Larkin had had through the years. Thoughts such as, God made me this way. How can I help it? Why would God give us such a demanding appetite for sex if he didn't intend for us to satisfy it? I need more than my wife can provide. Which leads then to thinking, you know, I'm actually being kind to my wife by meeting my needs in other ways. Which leads to such thoughts as, if God doesn't want me to do these things, then God can take away my desire. But James wrote, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor, as I said earlier, does he tempt anyone. Now, to say that the devil made me do it, most of us, I think, understand, is frankly ridiculous. But to say that God made me do it is blasphemous. In the book of Proverbs 19, a man's own folly ruins his life. Yet his heart rages against the Lord. It's not God. It's not Satan. It is not some outside force. I think healing begins with recognizing it's us. Romans chapter 5 says that in Adam we all sinned and became sinners. Now we may have a legitimate longing for pleasure, legitimate longing for security or for significance or for whatever, but we pervert it by consuming others on our way to satisfying our own longings. Our evil desires imagine all kinds of good, so we think of it. Our evil desires imagine all kinds of good that will come from the certain things that we do. We imagine how good it will feel. We imagine how alive it will make us. At first, as we begin to contemplate these things, we recognize that they are wrong. But the more we mull it over in our minds, the less evil it appears to us. In fact, as we turn it over in our minds, it begins to look better and better. We begin to think about all of the advantages and discounting all of the disadvantages and dangers. And very quickly, what we knew to be wrong, we now imagine to be no big deal. It's such a small thing, we say to ourselves. It can't possibly cause any harm, certainly no harm to anyone else. Or we say to ourselves, I won't go that far in this thing. I'll just indulge it a little, and then I'll quit. God won't mind. Again, after all, he made me this way. Then we become obsessed with it. It becomes, in our thinking, the only thing that will give us the pleasure we seek or that we imagine we deserve. Again, we see that the problem is not from some tempter outside, but it's from the traitor within, our own evil desires. Then James writes, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. Now, mind you, the sin was not in the temptation. We truly are all tempted. The sin is when we engage the thought rather than dismissing it, when we ponder it and we savor it. And as we do so, the thought simply becomes more and more powerful. James describes that evil desire as a parent that then gives birth to sin. And then that sin, when it becomes full grown, gives birth to the next generation, which is death itself. I think we've all experienced it. We entertain the desire, and the desire grows in intensity. We become increasingly desensitized, even as we ponder what it is we're about to do. We become dehumanized, living less and less as we were designed to live in giving and loving, and more corrupted until we perceive that the only thing that matters is meeting our perceived need. Cornelius Plantinga wrote it this way, we become internally lawless, like some mad charioteer. We now run our lives with more speed than direction. And all of it ends in death. Death of conscience. Death of emotions. Death of relationships. Death of society. And finally, the disintegration of the human spirit. And nothing but the common grace of God and the special grace of God has kept the human race these many millennia from simply totally annihilating itself. James writes, "Don't be deceived, my dear brothers. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created." See, all sin perverts what God intended. All sin pollutes what God meant to be pure. And all sin finally kills the very life it pretended to offer. Today, as some of you already know, we intend to give our attention to one killer in particular. God's gracious gifts of sexuality and sex have been perverted. What God intended for good, we human beings have used for evil. As we wrote to some of you earlier this week, this perversion of sex is pervasive in our culture. Sensuality has been unleashed in our country and around the world, leaving a path of sin and destruction in its wake. Every week, we on staff are dealing with the effects of such sin, and we can no longer remain silent. The issue is pornography. 40 million Americans regularly view internet pornography. Every second, 28,000 people are viewing it. Let me stop there for just a moment. If any of you are in the internet business or know something even about your own websites at your office and so forth, you know that there are mechanisms, systems, even organizations out there that software that can enable you to know exactly how many times somebody is coming to your site, exactly which pages they are looking at, how long they are spending on each page that they look at. So indeed, this information is known. Big Brother's out there. 28,000 people are viewing porn every second. 20% of men, even 13% of women, admit that they are using their work computers to view internet porn. In 1998, barely 10 years ago, there were only 72,000 pornographic internet sites. Today, 4 million. And 25% of all online searches are porn-related. The U.S. sales in pornography tops $13 billion annually, and worldwide it's $96 billion. More distressing yet, in a Christianity Today Leadership Journal survey of pastors, 37% of pastors said that they struggled with pornography. 51% of them said that they were tempted by it. Focus on the Family down here in Colorado Springs has a clergy care line, a telephone hotline. 25% of the calls they take from clergy are porn-related. And most surveys reveal that the problem is even more pervasive among others than even among pastors. And the matter touches every one of us. And it ought to concern every one of us. The average age of first exposure to internet porn is 11 years. 90% of 8 to 16-year-old children have seen online porn. It touches every family. Pornography is shaping and influencing the way we see life. It affects how every woman in our culture is perceived. Whether someone is 12 or 92, whether they are man or woman, it unfortunately is a subject with which we must deal in this culture. You see, this isn't just the stuff of masked murderer Ted Bundy. This is not just the stuff of Law and Order Special Victims Unit. This is the stuff of so much soft core porn, as it's referred to, that appears in so many of the PG-13 and R-rated movies watched by so many. It's the stuff of Christian couples that they use to somehow stimulate their own sex lives. It's the stuff that people are surfing through on the internet. It ensnares, it desensitizes, it dehumanizes, and it destroys. And today we want to say that there is something that can be done about it. That by the grace of God, men and boys and women and girls can be made more aware. And that indeed it is possible for people to be freed from the ensnaring entrapment of pornography. We want to address this subject today, not crudely, but frankly, very candidly. And to that end, we are going to separate the men and the women for the remainder of the hour. Speaking to the women this morning in rooms 177 to 79 will be Dee Dee Woodman. She is a longtime friend of ours and a counselor in our community with Eagle View Counseling Center. Speaking to the men will be Jason Martinkus. Jason is likewise a counselor and with New Life Ministries. We believe strongly that this is a message that everyone, seventh grade and above, needs to hear. And therefore, we're going to give the balance of the hour to doing just that. I'm going to ask you, please, if you would stand with me at this time. Dori Sear is over here. She and Dee Dee are going to go out this direction and around to rooms 177-79. We would encourage you women and girls to follow them now, if you would, please. Men, just remain standing and stay here with us, please. Thank you. You may be seated, gentlemen. Standing with me is Jason Martinkus. As I mentioned, Jason is with New Life Ministries. And Jason, thank you for coming today, and I'll turn most of the rest of the time over to you.